thing is, you think you have time. And I think that sometimes we settle into a space of procrastination, or the universe is, it's all in the timing of the universe, or it's all in due time. And time is a gift. And I believe that all things may not happen in time.
Hey there, and welcome to Work is Third, the podcast that is all about indulging in rest, setting boundaries, finding joy, and putting yourself first. I'm Dawn Hunter, your host, and I'm so excited you're here. Today's episode is close to my heart. My guest, Julie Rocco, isn't just a powerful advocate and storyteller. She's also one of my dearest friends. In this conversation, Julie shares her journey as a suicide attempt survivor and as the founder of What I Would Have Missed, a suicide prevention, intervention, and postvention initiative born from her own lived experience and grounded in community, connection, and purpose. At the heart of Julie's story is this powerful phrase: the thing is, you think you have time. We talk about what it means to move from intention to action, to prioritize what matters before it's too late, and to see rest not as idleness, but as a form of restoration. I just know that you will love Julie and the energy she brings just as much as I do. If you want to skip around, I've added section markers in addition to the regular chapter markers, but honestly, you're gonna want to stick around for the whole thing. Let's dive in. Hello, Julie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Dawn.
I'm glad that you're here, because you were privy to the makings of this show before it even had a name, when it was just a concept. And now we're doing it.
It's incredible to see intention into action. Love it.
Yes. And so I'm really grateful the listeners get to hear you, because you also have a podcast.
I do.
But before we get into that or other things, I want to start out by asking you to describe in one word how you're doing today.
Today, my word will be restored, restorative.
Restorative. Restored or restorative?
Restorative. I'm taking action towards becoming restored today. Fill in the cup today.
You're filling the cup today. Okay. Mm-hmm. It probably sounded like I said feeling the cup today, but you are filling the cup today.
I had to feel the cup before I could fill it.
Exactly.
Because the cup felt empty. You know what you do. I think that's a point of introspection, is to understand, what does your cup feel like? Does it feel heavy? Does it feel empty? Is it overflowing? And for me today, before I started my day, it was a bit empty from pushing myself through, you know, productivity and things that matter to me. And so today, it's literally called a restorative day that I'm taking.
Have you called it a restorative day for a long time? Or is this a new way that you're conceptualizing it?
This is a conceptualized way of being, an opportunity that my workplace has actually configured in a way to calibrate our commitment to our work, and a recognition that self-care is important too, as you give to care for others. And so restorative, it made a lot of sense to me to lean in that way. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay. I'm hoping that this podcast is restorative, but what else are you doing that's restorative today?
Honestly, when life puts you in a position to prioritize your activities and your passions and what must be done, the work that we believe must get done. The we is me in this case, that I must get done. The back burner stuff that just continues to simmer on the stove, you know it's cooking, but not, you know, in a way that's meaningful. And so today I'm taking the back burner things that are important to me and moving them into a space of productivity like this. You made the request to be a guest, and I knew that I held intention to be a guest, and today I'm moving that into action. I have some, you mentioned my podcast, so I have some activities that I want to work on for my initiative, What I Would Have Missed, that have been in the back burner as I, you know, focus on other priorities. I'm moving it into action today. So I think restorative for me, some people may define it as going to the beach, chilling out, watching Netflix, a book. For me, restorative is, where am I able to take action on the things that are really, really important to me And sometimes, again, how long can you hold intention before it just becomes complacency and procrastination versus I really do have intention to move this forward in the world and I'm going to act on it. So that's where I'm at today.
You know, I'm a firm believer that all things happen when they're supposed to happen. So even though we had been talking about this, today was the day it was meant to be, in my mind at least.
And I'm a firm believer in the notion of it's adapted from Buddhism, the quote, the thing is you think you have time.
Mm.
And I think that sometimes we settle into a space of procrastination or the universe is, it's all in the timing of the universe or it's all in due time. And time is a gift. And I believe that all things may not happen in time.
Right.
And so in my work, I actually have a life clock that really emphasizes this perspective for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the life clock, the way I've set it up and established it is I, you know, use statistics. You know, I like data and statistics. So I'm not just going to randomly set a clock. And I use the statistics of a life projection in number of days. And I set it. And it ticks backwards, minutes, seconds, minutes, hours, days. And for me, it is a tangible reminder that I have limited time to pursue the things that I believe I'm meant to pursue in this lifetime, in this human form. And so I appreciate your perspective of, all things uh-huh. happen when they're supposed to. And I believe that they happen when they're supposed to because you set the action towards it.
Mm.
Otherwise, it just sits as an idea. It sits as intention. It sits as something that a universal gift that maybe you were given that you are not willing to harness and take hold of and galvanize. And I think that the universe will find another path for it to come to fruition.
Yes, it's so funny. That has come up several times with other guests.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And I talk about the book Big Magic by, is it Elizabeth Gilbert who wrote Eat, Pray, Love?
Mm-hmm.
She talks about it from a creative perspective. So ideas come into being to who is ready to receive them, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not ready to receive it, it goes to someone else. And it's just this idea, I love the idea that these things are ready to come into the world when they're ready to come into the world. And either you are ready and you've taken action to prepare for that, to be the vessel, mm-hmm. or you haven't. And then it goes to, you know, the opportunities for someone else. And I think it's very aligned mm-hmm. with what you're saying now.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. I had not heard of the Big Magic, but that's exactly what I'm aligning with, that perspective.
So we'll say we had intention behind getting together,
yep.
which helped bring it into its time today.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I like, yeah, because those ideas can coexist, right? You can believe things that will happen when they're supposed to happen, but also that you have to be ready and be intentional about them happening.
Correct.
Would you add anything else to that? Or change the way I summarized it?
I think part of that too is believing in the power of manifestation and how we talk to ourselves. And many people will position themselves to listen to themselves. And that's when you start hearing the chatter and it may push you into a place of fear so that whatever intention you hold, whatever you seek to try to move forward in the universe, if you listen to yourself, doubt, fear, I'm not worthy of this. It's not meant for me. The timing is wrong. I don't have the money. I don't have the energy. I don't have the social capital. You could push yourself away from and convince yourself. Your executive committee could convince you that this is not for you. And the power of manifesting a belief in yourself by talking to yourself and telling yourself a different story to step into a space, perhaps with uncertainty, perhaps not fully financed, perhaps not fully having it worked out, perhaps not perfected, but also with courage to know that it is for you to do.
Yes.
So I would say that manifestation is really important to bringing things into action.
I 100% agree with that. And you actually reminded me of a conversation we had probably 5 years ago now, where you said the phrase, and I always try to remember exactly how you said it, and I'm sure I don't remember it exactly right, but it was like something like, step into the place of challenge by choice.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I loved that. And I remember journaling about it because, you know, oftentimes life puts us into challenging positions or situations and we don't have a choice. But then there are times that we may be unsure or doubtful or the path just isn't clear, but we can still choose to take on that challenge, manifest the future that we want, be intentional about it. And that's what you just reminded me of as you were talking.
Yeah. And that actual challenge by choice.
Mm-hmm.
At one point in my life, I was a ropes course facilitator, and people have a deep fear of heights. And I understood that. I don't have that fear, but I have loved people who have a deep, deep fear of heights. And I could empathize by trying to imagine a fear that I have that would challenge me to choose to step into that fear. And so when I was facilitating the ropes course challenges and belaying people that otherwise would seem, you know, leaders in the community that seem very competent, very firm in their belief systems and their value systems and the work that they're moving forward in the command of a room, a boardroom. And then you get them on a ropes course where you're asking them to climb several feet and trust me. And I'm little. So every once in a while, a big guy would walk up and look at me like, oh my gosh, I'm afraid and I'm trusting you to belay me and the weight difference is substantial. Sometimes they'd step back and say, like, let me see how this chick is going to belay other people and see her skills, which I understand. And then they would start to develop some confidence with encouragement. This is where a village matters too, where there was encouragement from their colleagues or whomever was, you know, with them, depending on the circumstances that brought them to the ropes course. And I would just let them know, this is a challenge by choice. And I understand your fear. I'm holding it with compassion and I'm cheering you on. And if you make it two rungs up this pole, it's like a utility pole. If you make it two rungs up and you push through that fear, kudos, man. And so, you know, they'd make their way up, and you know, you could see them shaking and I'm having to encourage them to take deep breaths, breathe, we've got you, and people cheering them on. And it's just amazing what a community, what a village, and what trust can do to help someone move into a space of courage, personal courage. And it wasn't peer pressure. It was peer support. And I think that's a big difference that nobody was, you know, saying, talking smack. It was all, we got you, we love you, do what you can, whatever kind of support. And so I learned a lot about challenge by choice as it extends to others and what you can do to support them in trying to help make a choice that is good for them as well as my own life. What is it that if I am going to take on what I consider a challenge, what are the support mechanisms that may help me move forward in that? Or, you know what, sometimes this challenge is not for me and I'm okay with that.
Right.
I don't have to step up to every challenge. In fact, most I won't, because I really have to discern the energy and the investment that I want to make into it. And so most often it's, this isn't for me.
Every challenge is not for me either. That's a good life lesson.
Well, particularly, like, I think you and I share the belief that when life is really hard and challenging, if you're trying to navigate and move through different spaces and places, it's for you when you're in the flow, when it seems like it's not necessarily easy, but there isn't so much resistance that you're facing to try to move in spaces that are just not for you. They're not. And I'm not talking about spaces that aren't diverse and accepting and inclusive and offer a space of belonging and are spaces that may be discriminatory. I'm not talking about those sort of spaces. I'm talking about spaces of perhaps entrepreneurship or spiritual growth or, you know, a club or a village or a tribe, so to speak. Because sometimes I have accepted the challenge of choice to step into rooms where perhaps I otherwise wouldn't be accepted, but that I do believe a presence matters. So it's a balance.
I remember I have spent many years trying to figure out what is the concept of flow. And the first time I think something clicked for me was realizing, this was probably when I was in undergrad, but just realizing the idea that if you're in flow with the life that is designed for you, there's not that much resistance.
Right.
Like we encounter resistance, but if you're encountering a lot, I think that's the universe telling you to look around you and see what is going on in your life that is misaligned, perhaps, with your energy, with your values. Something there is not in alignment because that's not flow.
Correct. And is it either depleting you in an unhealthy way, or is it fatigue? We're going to experience fatigue, but whether you're in the flow or not, because you're, in fact, if you're in the flow, you may experience it more so because it's easy to stay. It's easy to keep the, you know, the work and the productivity going because you're like, yeah, I got this. This is awesome. I'm moving. I'm grooving. I'm doing my thing. And there's lack of resistance. But it doesn't mean that you're not going to reach a threshold of where you do need a restorative day and you do need opportunities for self-care and outside of what you're considering the flow for the day. I think that it's really important to understand that even when you're in the flow, you still need to take a breather, take a beat.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can't enjoy the flow if you're not taking those moments of pause
right.
and rest, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So let's go back to the ropes course.
Oh, okay.
Well, I love ropes courses. And I don't know if they still do it, but USF has a ropes course, University of South Florida in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And once a semester, they would open it up to the public to register and go for the day. And I would go every time they had it open because it was just so challenging, but also so fun. So the one that was most challenging to me is when you sit on the end of the platform and you're just hooked at your waist. And then you just have to fall off and you swing. And nobody pushes you. You have to make the choice. You have to make the choice to lean forward and then let gravity carry you off of that and trust, you know, this rope that's attached to you and the beam that's attached to, that you're just going to swing and everything's going to be fine. But I would always do it because to me, it's a good mental exercise of like, how am I my own support in that moment to say, I can do this. I've done it before. I know I'm going to be fine. And what else can I get out of this experience? And so I love, 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 love a good ropes course.
Well, they do provide a unique environment for self growth as well as team building. So I felt grateful. I used to do it on I worked for 10-hour days when I was in my career at that time. And so on Wednesdays and Saturdays, often I would work the ropes course, and I just found such joy in it and being able to celebrate alongside others, watching them push through their fear.
It is a great team building exercise. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that you were describing it in terms of you come in and it doesn't matter what your title or role is, you have a certain vulnerability when you're on a ropes course, low ropes or high ropes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're there with a team, you really have to adjust because it's not just somebody giving direction and the other people executing. Everyone has to work together. And people still, at least from what I've observed, people are still themselves, right? You always have your adventurers, your people who need someone to help them, your people who are leading. That happens on the ropes course too. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a little bit less of that. There's a little bit more, I don't know, fluidity in the roles that people take on the ropes course. So when you're there with a team, you're really learning a dynamic, a way of working together that I think serves you well in the actual workplace.
Certainly. And I think that in some respects, it really shows the humanity of an individual in that we are a spectrum of emotions. And when broached with an opportunity or a personal challenge, we're not all equipped the same. So if you're afraid of heights, but you're the CEO of the organization, first of all, I always thought it was interesting that they knew going into that course that they were going to be really vulnerable around people that they typically lead and have the command and the control over leading. So to be that susceptible to showing your colleagues that there's a part of me you haven't seen at the workplace that I'm about to show you today. And the fluidity then comes from the flattening the organizational structure out there. And so that it isn't that you're automatically the leader by position or title and or tenure, but maybe you're going to step up as a leader because maybe you aren't afraid of heights and you're going to be the first one to go. Or you're a lot of times I was the first one to go. And there's a concept of the first follower. Are you familiar with the concept?
I don't know if I am.
So it's the concept that a leader alone with an idea or an ambition, innovation is one person, one leader. And if no one follows them, then they're a lone leader, a leader in a silo. Sometimes, you know, these are individuals that we see in society that have kind of ideas that nobody can get behind. This, either it's a philosophy or an invention or an idea, nobody gets behind. And the idea of the first follower is the importance of that first person who says, I believe in you. I believe in your idea. I want to support you. And I will be the first person to follow your leadership in that idea. And so the importance of that first follower in the ropes course, you know, I would go up, show them like, look, the equipment's safe. This is, could be fun because I believe in role modeling. But the first follower that went after me in the environment that we were in set the pace. That said, you know what? Yeah, she works here. Yeah, she does this all the time. Yeah, she knows the person, Blaine. Yeah, she trusts. But I'm going to show you what trust looks like as well. And I'm going to do this, and then you can follow after me. So it's a way of embracing the importance of that first person who sets the course to believe in the leader. And in a workplace, they shape culture. Often, they will shape culture. If somebody puts out an idea and they bring it to the forefront of like, dang, this is a really good idea, people will coalesce around it. So it's really important. Or like the idea of, I believe in you and I'm going to continue to support you. And I want to galvanize and coalesce others to support the Dawn Lab, to support Work is Third, to support your boundaries, briefs, you know, all the work that you're doing. I'll continue to do that.
Okay. So I was hesitating because I was like, Julie might be my first follower.
I'm the president of the Dawn Lab fan club.
Yeah. I mean, we were sitting together, co-working, essentially, mm-hmm. trying to work out what we're doing with these projects that we were really passionate about, are really mm-hmm. passionate about. And I have deep gratitude because of you, because of our relationship. So many wonderful opportunities and people have come into my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel really grateful for that. But I also think this is the being intentional about the way you framed it too, the first follower idea. Because if you're someone like me who naturally, I think, have a leadership role or have a leadership perspective, how often do we intentionally say, well, how do I step back and be a follower and support someone else? Or how can I be a good support for someone else? Mm-hmm. Which ties back into what you were saying earlier about the ropes course in terms of the support that you provided, you know, as the instructor.
Well, instructor, facilitator, and belayer. Belayer, essentially, yeah. on the ropes course, your safety was in my hands.
Yeah. So that support and then translating that to the workplace, it makes me wonder, how has the idea of first follower played out for you in other areas, either other jobs you've held or just in other aspects of your life?
Well, it's been on both sides of it, whether or not I'm trying to lead something and need an individuals to endorse it. So it's like the idea of somebody giving you street cred and saying, look, I know this person. I know their integrity. I know their heart. I know the passion that they're bringing to this. I know the intellect that they're bringing to this. I know them. I know the breadth of this person and this human and their motives. And so I've had to identify individuals for me to support things that I want to move forward and to help accelerate and give them a new life outside of what I could on my own. And then I think that it really matters to me to show up as a good family person and as a good friend and as a good colleague, trying to find ways where I can always support the passions of the people that I love. I want to be courageous, hope to be courageous. I hope to show up courageously in their lives to say, yeah, this is a new idea, perhaps, and something that you launched. And of course, embrace it with, you know, some practical aspects of it too. So I know you and I, we're like, okay, like, this is amazing. Okay, let's think about this. Let's think about, you know, what does it look like to birth this project? And what are the resources you would need? What are the different things that could help give it life? I think that being a first follower for people that you love and that you want to show up for, it doesn't negate all of the other potential aspects of the realities of the challenges that they will potentially face in this, or the, you know, paths of resistance that may show up. But dang, doesn't it feel good? Because you're out for me, Dawn. And I know it. I know the reciprocation of the relationship. It just feels so good to have somebody that believes in you.
It does.
And somebody that can see beyond the now and into the potential and like really breathe that belief into you. And so I hope that I can be that person that helps people pursue their dreams, pursue their paths, pursue their passions, and know that I'm there to support it.
You are that person for me, for sure. Aww. I mean, I think about just how I arrived at where I'm at today, like with this podcast or with the Dawn Lab. And you have always been so supportive. And it's so important to have your squad of people or even one person, right, who helps you to say your dream isn't wild, or maybe it is wild, but your dream is attainable. It is good for you. It is something you should follow and do, or whatever that conversation looks like. But just having that person in your corner. I think you've been so consistent in that conversation. But even before I branched out on my own, I think I always loved having conversations with you, because it's like talking to you is, we think so much bigger. It's not just this moment. It's the bigger picture of life and what we're experiencing in at work, or, you know, lunch with friends, or, you know, at a play or whatever. They're all connected into this bigger story. And I think you always bring out the bigger story.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So one of the things you do as a storyteller is your own podcast. Yeah. Do you want to talk about it?
Sure. It's a podcast. It's an initiative. Specifically, it's an initiative for suicide prevention, intervention, and postvention, called What I Would Have Missed, based upon my journey as a suicide ideation and attempt survivor and the moments that I would have missed had I died by suicide. And through the initiative, a podcast was birthed, where initially I thought that I would interview people similar to this format after I shared my story and just what the intentions around the podcast were. And then I interviewed people that were suicide attempt survivors, and they shared their story. And then what started to happen was, I think some people want to maintain some anonymity, because it is a hard truth to live and carry for some. And it's a part of their life that it stays with us always. There's no amnesia around it. However, there's a rearview mirror that can be that could create a lot of distance between that part of your life and the life that you are in now. And so what started happening is individuals started writing me their What I Would Have Missed story, in the hopes that I would read it on the podcast, that they didn't necessarily want to be on the podcast and identified, but that their voice and the amplification of their voice and their stories held a truth for them, that if somebody else hears my story, perhaps it could be a lifeline. So I have a stack, like hundreds of people that have written to me that, quite frankly, it was interesting. I've had this concept for a while, for years, and I kept stuttering with it. So again, talking about challenge by choice and having a village and support systems in place. And what was I asking of those support systems? So in this particular case, it's my family, namely, and to ask them, what are your thoughts if I want to bring up this past memory, this hard memory of losing my partner to suicide, as well as my own attempt to take my life? And are you going to be okay if this is a recurring theme of something that it's really caused a lot of pain for all of us? And, you know, they were okay with it. And then it started to take a life of its own. And I was like, I'm going to retract. I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready to have this sort of spotlight on that part of my journey. And so I retracted, but I held the website, I held Facebook, you know, all of the assets, so to speak, of What I Would Have Missed, thinking that I wasn't ready to let it go, but I wasn't ready to fully pursue moving it forward. So it was, I wouldn't even say it was on the back burner. It wasn't even on the stove at a certain point. I had it in existence, but with no purposeful meaning. And then after my father died, I started thinking about that quote. The thing is, you think you have time. And I realized that this is my time. This is my moment to not be afraid to share my truth, to bring mental health awareness, mental awareness around mental illness, awareness around the opportunity to have a journey of hope, healing, and happiness. And so I went back, pursued it again. And then my granddaughter, I found out that I was going to have a granddaughter. Her name is Dahlia. But yes, at the moment that I hesitated again, it was, do I really want my granddaughter to hold this image of me? Do I really want it to be at the forefront of part of my story that she knows and that I share with her without the opportunity for her to say, that's on my nonna, is what she's going to call me. She'll call me nonna because of the visibility of it. So I was like, man, I don't know that I want to put her in this situation where her nonna story continues to move forward. And so I stopped again, moving the What I Would Have Missed initiative forward. And then a couple months ago, after Dahlia was born, I talked to my sons and to my daughter-in-law and said, here's what's happening with me. I have what I believe is a purpose and a calling and a passion to fulfill, but there's a tension in the space. And I think this happens a lot for people, is when you're trying to balance and hold different perspectives, there can be a tension or a conflict, an internal conflict. So I was experiencing an internal conflict of, this is mine to do. This is my big magic moment that was gifted to me in an odd way, of course. And is this harming the people that I love? Is this going to continue harm that I had sought to basically compartmentalize to memories versus moments that I'm creating now? And so I talked to them, and they were so supportive, so encouraging, so loving. I said, Mom, this is yours to do. And Dahlia will grow to appreciate this. Perhaps she will have her own struggles. Perhaps she'll know people with their own struggles, and she'll see this as you creating light and love in the world where she may have experienced darkness. And so it essentially was an endorsement of love and an endorsement of the idea that my story matters, my truth matters, and that potentially it can save a life. And so now I'm getting back into it. And as we started this, and we talked about restorative and what are some of the things. So today, this afternoon, I will get back into that stack of papers, because that's the other part that I've held some guilt around, is that people trusted me to be a conduit and a vessel and a messenger of their story. And it sat on pause for a little bit. And so I want to breathe life back into their aspirations to have their story shared in the hopes that it will help others. It also is a space, it's become a space where people write to me about what they have missed sharing with their loved ones that have died by suicide. And I want to elevate and amplify their voices as well. And so the podcast, it's taken on different iterations. And this is, again, is where we have to think about challenge by choice and what are prohibitive factors that inhibit progress towards that. And perfection is definitely one of them. And I've had to just, you know, move forward where, this isn't the best editing, or this isn't the, as long as I'm not harming someone, because again, it's a big topic. It can be a heavy topic. And so I'm sensitive to that. I'm okay. I'm okay with moving forward without perfection, as long as I'm not harming anyone. And I'm going to start move forward again in different ways and unique ways. So I'm grateful for the opportunity that I feel like my sons gifted me with and my family gifted me with, the opportunity to pursue what I believe is, again, I'm going to use these strong, big words that not everybody likes, but purpose, calling.
No, it's beautiful to see you pursue your calling. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's something that you have wrestled with fitting into the life that you are currently living. You know, you have a full-time job. You're very engaged in the community. Mm-hmm. So you have a very active schedule. And I think finding the time for this initiative, which is so important to you, it's great to see you living that purpose, even if the path is up and down, that you're doing it.
Thank you.
And I mean, you said so many amazing and great things that we should all remember. So I also am a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And even with this podcast, you know, I'm doing all the editing and in creating things, but it's a challenge for the perfectionist in me to say it is good enough. What people are sharing is beautiful and powerful and needs to be out in the world. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And that's a hard lesson to incorporate or way to remind yourself to live every day when you're a perfectionist, because you want everything to be exactly how you want it.
Well, yeah, I think you and I both have a standard of trying to, meet a standard of excellence. And there are times when that meeting that standard of excellence is a barrier to moving things out in the world. And who are we to create our own barriers when there's more important things to do, things to push out, things to mobilize? Perfection definitely is the death of many great ideas.
It's It so is.
Well, it puts the mute button on what you're trying to do and what you're bringing to the world. It potentially puts the mute button on what I'm trying to do and bring to the world, when what you're doing will really give people the opportunity to think about how they situate themselves in their life and the priorities of their lives and the boundaries they establish for themselves and balance and just the psychological safety you're trying to create for people and making hard decisions. And to think that perfection would be your mute button, that's stifling. That's detrimental to your purpose. And then similarly for me, that I would hit the mute button on potentially a story that could save a life. Who am I to allow perfection or my perceived notion of perfection to get in the way of that? So sometimes I think you got to step out of your own way, as they say, step out of your own way and let things move forward. Again, as long as you're not harming someone.
Well, and with what you're doing, you mentioned being the vessel, like you bringing the stories forward. And I think that we're aligned too in that, because that is part of the design of Work as Third. Is everybody who knows me probably knows I have very strong opinions about workplace culture.
I do.
And boundaries.
Yes.
But my experience is one experience.
Correct.
And the lessons I've learned are my lessons, but I hope people can learn from them. But I also know there are so many things, ways of approaching work and family and life and church and all the things that matter to us. And being able to share those stories with people, I think helps us to be in a space where it's safe to have the conversation and just reimagine the way that we move through the world. Mm-hmm. And I think you're doing that too, with the way that you're uplifting stories, because your story matters to someone who hears it. The stories that you share of your listeners also will matter. They're going to reach the people they need to reach.
Mm, thank you.
Yeah.
That's my hope.
Yeah.
That is my hope.
And also thank you for correcting me, because I did say, do you want to talk about your podcast? And you're like, it's an initiative. Which is true though, because it's so much more than a podcast.
Thank you.
It really is. It's really about building community and giving people a safe space to connect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. About building community, connection, and conversations.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the mission.
So you have so many gems, first of all. You talked about the burner, the stove analogy when we first started talking. And I had never heard it framed that way, but where you were like, I'm just rotating what's on the front burner.
Mm-hmm.
Logically, of course, that makes sense. But I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a really great way to describe it. Rotating your priorities.
Well, and if you follow a through line of that and you think about burnout, like literally what's burning on the stove way too long. And the idea that, I don't know about you, I'm not the best cook. All right. So I've had this experience more than once. So maybe you're just going to vicariously live it through me if you haven't. But, you know, when you leave something on the stove too long, it burns, it scalds, it no longer becomes viable for what its intended purpose was. And so for me, I've had to learn, if I leave something on the front burner too long, I broach burnout. Understand, you are no longer producing what it was you intended. When you put that pot on the stove, when you stepped into the room, when you went to the office, when you opened up the computer, when you, whatever it is, burnout is even... when you're giving care to a loved one, that's why they have respite. That's why we have vacation days. That's why we have sick days. That's why we have weekends or, you know, space to open up the breath more fully and exhale more deeply. And so I think, you know, using that analogy of the stove and rotating things, if you're not rotating things and something is just on high, boom, way too long, you're going to set off the smoke detector. And it's not fun.
No, I'm a good cook. I'm not a good baker.
Mm.
So when you were talking, I thought of two things. One, I tried to make a pecan pie using my mom's recipe. She makes a great pecan pie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I did to it, but you just said it wasn't the thing I intended it to be. But when I was like 12, I remember cooking in our kitchen. We lived on a military base at the time, and I left a spatula on the stove.
Oh.
And I think I must have left a burner on. At any rate, it caught on fire.
Yeah.
And then, so it caused a little mini fire in the kitchen. It was fine, and it was contained. But I think you're right. It's such a great analogy when you leave things unattended, or when you leave things just on the heat, constantly doing, constantly getting your attention, constantly getting energy. Eventually goes up in flames. It goes up in smoke, as you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's us as human beings too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about how you make those transitions around the burner and the stove and what goes in the cupboard and then comes back out later.
Well, some things end up in the garbage disposal as well, because you realize like it's no longer worth giving your energy to. And not everything has to be positioned in a return on investment. However, I do believe that it has to align with where you what you want to see move forward in the world. So not that it's always going to cycle back to you, but at least it's pushing. You can see it pushing something forward that you believe in. And so for me, you know, you and I both always start a lot of sentences. I was listening to a podcast and, you know, you and I both listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yes.
And I had heard one about the idea that humans really struggle with the ability to project time in the future. That's why we position ourselves to overcommit ourselves, because we really struggle with that notion of, oh yeah, you know what? Next month, okay, this will have been done. This will have been completed. I should have this done. And this person's going to be able to help me. And then, and we really justify our calendars to situate ourselves for things that we want to say yes to with a real, essentially, it's a myth that we create for ourselves that everything's going to be cool when it gets there. And then it gets there and you're like, dang, man. Why did I say yes to this? And you start to maybe feel resentment towards the commitment. You maybe like, oh God, please don't be mad at me. I'm so sorry. And you know, I don't want to get the reputation that I'm flaking on people all the time because I've overcommitted, or that I, you know, don't count on me for not being reliable and things of that nature. And so I've really had to calibrate, because I was saying yes way too much. And, you know, something's got to give. So it's either your reputation that you, if you do show up, you're not going to show up in a way that's meaningful. If you decide not to show up and follow through on the commitment, you are not a reliable friend, colleague, family member. If you show up and you fully, full on, 100% give to the commitment when you're overcommitted, that's when you, that's the burnout, or you get sick, or again, there's resentment around it. And so I really started to think more, particularly after listening to this podcast, about the way that we position ourselves in our future and really do it in a way that's not aligned with the truth of our situations. And so I've said, okay, I know that I work full time. I feel very passionate about my full time work. And so I'm committed to that work. Also, I believe friendships and family are really important, and to make time for family and friends. And I also believe in, you know, and this is again, is when I know you're holding dreams that require your time, that require your commitment, that there are going to be times when we don't see each other for weeks to be able to have dinner and sit and have lunch and catch up, and knowing that we eventually will. And I'm grateful for that grace we give each other. And a lot of our friends do, because we're in these spaces where we're trying to support each other and trying to do different things that are important for us. And, you know, kind of the spectator sport analogy of I'm cheering for you. I'm on the stands and I'm, you know, you look up and you're going to see me there. But you may not always see me at the lunch table, because you got your thing, I've got my thing. But psychological presence, I think, is really important. And I do think that, you know, if you sent me an urgent text, I would drop everything. And so I think that's important when we think about our commitments and what expectations we can set people up to think about, you know, when there are aspects of our time that are more demanding and where we give each other space, grace, and permission to pursue other things outside of just our friendships and our family responsibility. And a lot of times when I look at my calendar for the week, and I'm like, whoo, I've got something every night. I try to use my mornings for introspection or sleeping in maybe longer than I want to, because I'm always ambitious. I want to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and Mel Robbins my way through the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get up out of bed commitment. But sometimes I just have to give myself a break. You know,
and what is the Mel Robbins 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 commitment?
Oh, okay. So do you know Mel Robbins?
No.
Oh, she's got the, like, if not the most popular podcast, and she's amazing. I love Mel Robbins.
Podcast?
Mel Robbins. she got real creative. She didn't get too creative, but it's the Mel Robbins podcast.
Easy to remember.
Yeah. Well, I encourage you to listen to at least one to see if it's for you. But one of the things that she was, when she first came out particularly, was known for is the idea of, let's say, you know, I'm in bed, my bed is cozy, comfy, the alarm goes off, and I just lay there. Her perspective is countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and up. Don't give yourself a moment to really change your mind. Follow through on that commitment and with this countdown, and it really does shift your thinking. She's done all the scientific work, you know, and has experts and scientists around it. And it's just the idea of don't give yourself too much space to be comfortable. Don't give yourself too much time to think about all of the, this is going to go wrong, this failure, because again, whatever's cycling through your brain that's telling you don't do this, it just resets it. It gives yourself a chance to stop, reset, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and make the, and, you know, propels you towards a decision. The other thing that I heard on a podcast.
That's how I learn a lot of things these days.
It's the idea that when you think about who we are throughout the day and the evening, we are multiple people. And so this podcast started having me think about, why is it that my 10 p.m. self, I mean, I will sleep in my workout clothes to mitigate any friction, you know, because that's one of the things to healthy habit building, mitigate friction. Mm-hmm. Get the coffee maker ready.
True.
Sleep in my my workout clothes, have my tennis shoes by the bed, know where my keys are. Don't give myself any barriers to get my butt to the gym because it's important to me.
Yeah.
So that's my 10 p.m. self. Why at 5 a.m. am I a different self? Why am I not able to show up as my 10 p.m. self at 5 a.m.? Why am I, if I set the intention on my lunch hour to go for a long walk, and I'm like, nah. You know, so it's like, what are those intervening barriers to me fulfilling the commitments that I made at 10 p.m., at, you know, 5 a.m., at 5 p.m.? And so again, when we think about the calendar and the commitments, why is my Monday, Julie, not showing up Friday night for dawn? Or for whatever commitment that I've made.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to really think about full alignment. And I do. I reflect on it a lot now when I do say yes. Is this just my Monday, Julie? Or do I believe there is going to be the trajectory of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday that I'm going to be glad I said yes on Monday too, showing up Friday?
Yeah, I actually probably take that to the extreme where I don't like to schedule things far in advance because I'm like, I don't know if Dawn 4 weeks from now wants to go to dinner.
Right.
I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's what the research shows is that if you schedule things out too much, too full, you think that you're doing yourself a favor. And, oh, I got myself a calendar, but that you will actually have a greater potential of resentment versus joy versus like, if I text you in the morning and say, hey, yo, what are you doing for dinner tonight? You've got plans. You're like, no, let's look, you know, or catch me at 5 and let's see how I'm feeling, how I'm doing, yeah, whatever. There's a lot more opportunity for you to experience joy in that. And some people are like, oh, but I plan it in 4 weeks. If I know we're going to dinner, that gives you something to look forward to. Well, that could be true.
True.
And the research also suggests that that could create dread of like, dang, man, why did I didn't realize I was going to have this rough work week, or I didn't realize, you know, life was going to intervene in a different sort of way before I said yes. So,
yeah.
So there's balance. I think it just depends on sometimes even personality.
Right. Well, very true.
Yeah.
But now I'm glad I can say, aha, it's research-based, friends, that I have to cancel these plans that I made.
Yes. Science says.
Science says.
Not alternative facts. Science.
So speaking of podcast episodes, what you were talking about, this idea of not thinking of our future selves in a way that is helpful to our present self, it's called present bias. There's an episode, I think, of Hidden Brain about this. I remember that being a very eye-opening episode for me because I also started shifting, thinking about what does future me really want to be invested in?
Mm-hmm.
And also, do I think this is going to give me a sense of dread?
Right. Yeah.
Because if I say, yes, I can do that, even though like in this moment, I have had that happen a lot, actually, where I'll say, yes, I can do that. But I know that inside I just feel challenged by committing to it, then for sure, future Dawn is going to hate that.
Right. Yeah.
So why did I say yes? So then I've just tried to be more, what is my gut? What is my intuition in this moment? Do I really have the time, you know, looking more broadly at my calendar and leaving more space for magic, which I like to say, but like having that space in your calendar gives you the freedom to call a friend up and say, hey, can you go to dinner tonight? Mm-hmm. You know, when I have commitments every night of the week or most nights or the weekends, it doesn't leave me those moments of serendipity.
Right. Yeah. And it is true. That is, sometimes I think you can plan the magic. And there's nothing wrong with planned magic and the wow, aha moments of magic that you weren't expecting or the serendipity of it. It's just incredible. It's amazing to have those experiences. And I think those are the gifts of the universe.
They are. So we are going to have to come back at some point in the future because I need to talk about this life clock.
Oh.
I would have existential dread.
Really? Oh, no.
I would.
Well, some people use it to count down, the baby birth or the retirement clock or I'm going to get married clock or whatever it is. Or, I have 30 more days until the big race, you know, so I've got to train. Whatever it is that positions you into a recognition of whether it's celebratory, whether it's challenge, whether it's just time is finite, it gives you a sense of, it's counting backwards for all of us and whatever that means.
So you made a memory surface for me. I was talking to my mom who lives in New Mexico, mm-hmm. still where I'm from. And I live in Florida, of course. And she was talking about planning a vacation or planning a trip to see us. And she said, if I expect to live until 80, and she read an article about how frequently you see your family as you get older. And it was something like twice a year or something
think about
like that.
Yeah.
She said, if I live to 80 and I only see you twice a year, then we only have 18 more visits left with each other. I was like, wow, when you think of it that way.
I just had the conversation with a colleague about that very thing.
Yeah.
Because they were vacillating on whether they should make the trip or not. And so I said, if you really think about if you are so blessed that this individual lives, you know, 10 more years and you maybe see them, you think once a year is a lot. So maybe it's every other year because I don't want to go back to the same place to visit. That's boring. I know why. All I do is I recognize why I left, you know, and I don't live there kind of thing. You will see that person 5 more times.
That's it.
Talk about boom. The preciousness of the time we share with people. And I know people think that technology can bridge a lot of that. And I do think it does. Like, you know, Dahlia, I like love FaceTime now. And I'm able to get videos of her and all those sort of things. But technology does not at all replace true human connection and sharing those moments. It just doesn't. And so, your mom would only think about that.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. With that kind of framing of, whoa, this is really a precious moment for me to have limited. How did that change your perspective? Because I know it did, but how?
It did. I think it made me, that realization occurred to me at a time where I was also prioritizing work a lot more mm-hmm. and just my life here. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy when you don't live physically near the people that you love for a lot of time to pass and you think nothing of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really made me think, well, how am I spending my time? And shouldn't my family be a priority? You know, if I'm going to sit down and say, here's what I'm going to prioritize on my calendar this week or a month from now or whatever it is, shouldn't family be at the top?
Mm-hmm.
And granted, I'm like you, I feel blessed to say that I love my family. I know that's not everyone's situation where they don't always have those relationships. But whoever the loved ones are in your life, I would put it that way. Recognizing that time is precious and we're not guaranteed an opportunity to spend time together. For me, it just made me shift and say, this has to be at the top of my list. That if my mom or my brother says they want to do something or my family says they want to do something, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I hate driving anymore. I used to love driving. Now I hate it. And that becomes a barrier because my brother lives a little over an hour from me. And I'm like, it's so far. Driving to Tampa is far, which will be funny to people who live in the Tampa Bay area. But then it's like, what is an hour?
Yeah. And that really hits home deeply to me because my pop, when he was alive, he lived in Sun City Center. So I'd have to drive over the Sunshine Skyway Bridge and through and get through the visitor gate and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, man, I don't have enough gas. I got to make my pit stop or whatever. Man, Dawn, I wish I had only an hour to drive to see him. Only, you know, a few gallons of gas to be able to visit with him. And only a Sunday afternoon where, yeah, there are other things I could be doing and I could convince myself I should be doing. I would give so much to only have an hour drive. And so I think that, take the drive to see your brother. I know it may seem like a hassle. It may seem like, man, I don't want to be in a car for an hour there and an hour back. Take the drive. And, you know, you said something about setting up your priorities, something I did a while back, several years ago. I did what's called a values pyramid exercise. It was really important. If these are your values, here's the, you know, the top value or priority, and then, you know, you ratchet them up. Then I had to put, if this is my value, so if family is your value, how is that expressed in the way that you show up versus saying, oh, I love my family. They're so important to me. My friends are so important to me. My work is so important to me. But what it had me do is not just list them, but then I put equals this. So if family is important to me, I put 4 times a month I would see them, because every Sunday we would go into Sun City Center and have a meal and everything together. And so that was my commitment. That was my checks and balance. If this is important to me, if this is a value, if this is a priority, how is it manifesting in the world with the use of my energy, time, talent, and whatever, money? And that was a really powerful process for me. And I continue to do that. Every once in a while, I'll say, what are my values and how are they actually showing up beyond resting with me in my heart and in my space? But how are they actually unfolding in the world? And if they're not, that's when I have to go back to my calendar and say, dang, man, I'm making commitments that are not aligned with my values. And that's how you can make an easier no.
Yes. So this is actually one of my favorite exercises to do, because it's not enough to know what you think you value. Right. What does it look like in practice? I do it in the workplace setting, or I encourage people to do that. You know, I value my time. It's how my time gets used at work is very important to me, and having autonomy over that.
Yeah.
So for me, that means I have a lot of control over my calendar, but it's important to know that. So it's like, if I'm in an environment where I don't have that level of control, that is very challenging for me. And I either need to find a way to work in that environment, or I need to find an environment that's more aligned with my approach to time. But you have to be intentional in saying, here are my values, and then here's how they look. In practice, in action.
Right.
Yeah. Values in action.
Values in action.
Okay. Well, we could go on forever. I could.
Same.
This has been so joyful.
Likewise. Thank you.
I'm so grateful for you sharing and being open about your experiences and how they've shaped you. And just being here and being part of this experience means the world to me.
Oh, ditto.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
End scene.
Julie's reminder, the thing is, you think you have time, is something that I will carry with me, and I bet you will too. Time is precious, our stories matter, and it's never too late to choose yourself, to choose healing, or to choose joy. If you or someone you know is struggling, please reach out. You are not alone. You can call the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988, and someone is available 24 hours a day. To learn more about Julie's work, visit What I Would Have Missed. You'll find the link in the show notes. And thank you for listening. If this episode spoke to you, please share it, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and remember, your time matters, your boundaries matter, and your stories matter.